Oh, hey kids, this is Rashout Field.
And this is the Rashout Cast. I am in a different car than usual, so it should be quieter. I listened to, Marshall Latham's got a show called Strewn Along the Path. And I don't know why I said it in that weird voice. He doesn't say it in that weird voice, although he should. Where he just basically drives and talks about something. There's a subject. And I was listening to it today, and I enjoyed it. And I thought about how I always feel a little bit guilty when I do a Rish Outcast that doesn't have a story attached. And lately, in 2016 at least, I've tried to do every other one. I alternate a story one, a conversation one, a story one, a conversation one. But in the back of my mind, I'm always worried that somebody's going to say, oh, there's another one of those that doesn't have a story attached. I'm not going to listen. But I really enjoyed listening to Marshall talk about movies that he'd seen recently. And so I'm in the car. I've got to go meet my father. A brief update. I got in a car accident a couple weeks back. I was out in the middle of nowhere. And when I say out in the middle of nowhere, no place to stop. No exits off the freeway, no cell phone service, no light. I ran over a deer, and, I had two options. One was pull over in the dark and, use my keychain flashlight to look around, or drive until there was a place where I could stop and look at the car and make sure everything was all right. And I chose the latter, and I think somebody who's not me would have said, that's dumb. You always pull over after an accident and make sure everything's all right. The problem in my mind is, what if I pulled over and I stopped, and the car wouldn't start again? An object in motion tends to remain in motion. Okay, I have no idea what I'm talking about. I was just afraid of that. I was out in the middle of nowhere. There's no way I could call for help. And so in my mind, I thought, I'm going to go somewhere where I can call for help if that happens, if the car dies. So I drove 20 miles, and there was a little town, had a gas station. I stopped, I pulled off, and I looked. And to make a long story short, there had been some damage to the bottom, the underside of the car. There's a grill. There's a grill on the front of a car, and it's, you open the hood. Anyway, some of that had torn out, and it wasn't dragging, but it was hanging low. And I called my cousin, and I need to finish the story. I got lost. One, two, three times. In fact, where I hit the deer, I was lost. And if I had not either been distracted or, I don't know if that was my problem, that I was distracted, but something made me miss my turnoff, and I shouldn't even have been where I hit the deer. But I got lost again. I got turned around a third time. I went back to where there was cell phone service and called my cousin and asked him, exactly like road atlas for idiots kind of thing. Okay, and this is where I go, and which exit do I get off on, and which direction do I go on it? And then I repeated back what he had said, because I did not want to be lost anymore. And so I followed his directions once there was no longer cell service, and there was no such exit. But I did ultimately find my way back to the right way home. And by that point, there was cell service, and I was able to turn on one of those little navigator things that tells you, turn right 1/4 mile, which are really useful, but are not really useful when there's no cell service. I don't know. I feel weird about saying that, because if I had had that thing going, I could at least have looked at the text, right? And said, okay, I was supposed to get off at so-and-so exit. I didn't do it, and I would have missed the deer. But these are easy ways to beat yourself up I don't need to beat myself up in this case. What's done is done. But the punchline of the story is, if I hadn't gotten lost the second two times, I would have made it home. But because it was a roughly 3.5 hour drive, ended up being about 5 hours and 10 minutes long, the car died on the freeway. I had to pull it over to the side. It would not start again. And then I had to get it towed. Would have just been a tiny bit easier if I had made it home and then the car had died. But that's not what happened. So right now I'm in a rental car. I had coverage for that, and they took care of me in so much as I have a car to drive if I need to go to work, if I need to go podcast with you. But it's been a long time, and I still keep not hearing from the insurance adjuster, and I worry about that, because why would they not resolve this as fast as they possibly could? They're paying for a rental car every single day, but they don't resolve this. And I understand the second they say, okay, here's your check or whatever, they cut me loose. And it's like, and now you're on your own. You have to fix your car. You have to buy yourself a car or whatever. We're not going to pay for a rental car anymore. But that hasn't been the case. And I don't know. Maybe these things just take a ton of time and they have to get approval and bureaucracy and stuff. But it just doesn't make sense that I'm driving this car that they're paying for with no repercussions, with no consequences to that that'll come down on me. And, you know, if you've been in an accident and you've done all this stuff before, you probably are laughing because I'm naive. I don't know how things work. This is the first time I have been in an accident where it was my own insurance that I was paying for, because I was on my parents' insurance for years, right? And the last accident, a guy hit me in LA and he was freaked out. He's like, let's not talk to the insurance about this. I'll deal with it, which was awfully trusting and stupid of me in retrospect, where I'm just like, oh, okay, well, I trust you to take care of things. So anyhow, I didn't know what to expect, and you know, it's probably the insurance company's job to make you feel like you're okay. You don't stress, don't freak out. There's no pressure. We're going to fix this for you. And that again sounds super naive. It sounds like 1950s. It's like no one who's not a communist would refuse to name names. That kind of black and white simplicity. But my dad saw a car, holy cow, it's 2 weeks ago now, that he liked and said, you should come look at it. It's a good car. It was a Toyota Corolla, and for some reason he has become this Toyota, what do you call somebody who's a fan of something that pushes it on other people? He's become a missionary for the Toyota company. All my life, my dad loved Volkswagens. He had a Rabbit when I was a little kid. And then, actually, I think the very first Rabbit he got, he drove into a deer. He hit a deer on the way to work. And I think they towed the car back to the house. And I remember seeing the blood on the hood. You know, it had gone over the top of the car and smashed the hood in and the windshield. And with me, I drove over the deer, which is probably a way better way to go for safety's sake, I guess. I have no idea. Anyhow, he got another Rabbit. He started getting a Jetta later. I remember in the 90s, he got this Jetta in like 88 or 89 that he was just so happy with, so proud with. He still has it. Although the last time I drove it, it had no guts, as they say. You know, it could get up to about 50, but you know, that's my dad. He doesn't need a car that goes faster than 50. He's one of those guys who's prided himself on never having a speeding ticket, or you know, that's probably something you say to your kids. He hasn't had a speeding ticket in 30 years, that sort of thing. He doesn't get in accidents except for, you know, with the deer as far as I can remember. And he saw this Toyota, and so I drove down to the town, not where he lives, but the town where all my stories take place. I write these stories about Praisedon, and that's where I drove. And not all my stories take place there, but you know what I'm saying. A big chunk of my stories took place there. And we got there, and I was late, as usual, and he didn't berate me for being late, but the car had been sold. They had sold it the day before, and the guy on the lot said, oh, it was here 2 months, and nobody bought it, and then here you guys come, and it sold yesterday. And my dad was not too thrilled with that. But they had an Acura, which I thought was a pretty car. And I know nothing about automobiles, guys. I know whether I think it's pretty or not. I know what color it is. And I like certain colors. But I said, oh, but hey, Dad, let's look at this Acura. Maybe we should take that for a test drive. And he did not want to. In fact, one point he pulls me aside and he says, I rescind my offer, which is such a weird thing to say. But I guess it's in keeping with him. He's an educated man, my dad, even though I describe him as a farmer and, you know, he's not ever been... I guess he was a high school teacher right around the time I was born, but that's like the highest, the most intellectual job he ever had. He ran a Der Wiener Schnitzel. He was a mailman for 25 years or longer. But I rescind my offer And he's a no-nonsense guy. He's the patriarch of the family. You don't argue with that. I've learned from many years of experience that when he says something like that, he's not going to explain what that means. And if he does, he'll be like, don't you know what rescind means? Garbage. Do you go to school? That kind of stuff. And Abby told me the other day that I describe my dad as kind of an ogre and an asshole. And I don't disagree. There is a persona when I imitate my dad, and I think it's a very accurate imitation, but I only ever talk about the grouchiness, the dourness, the humorlessness of the man. And when he's around other people, he's different. He's a jovial guy. I've heard, I'm trying to remember, about 10 years ago, somebody asked me who I was, and I said, you know, he was my dad. And there's like, he's your dad? Holy cow, he's one of the best guys I've ever known. Or maybe they even went as far as to say he was the best guy they'd ever known. And that, it didn't vex me, it didn't upset me, it didn't puzzle me. I don't see that side of him very often. I see him as the disciplinarian, and I see him as a man who saw a lot of potential probably in his boy, and his boy never achieved any of that potential. You know, I can understand that. I see in myself a lot of wasted potential, but I don't think that I'm ever going to achieve any of it. I try. I set these little baby steps, these little minor goals, write a novel, you know, get a podcast out, share my work, put something up if people want to buy it. And those are little victories, but I'm never going to be what I had the potential of being when I was 9, 8, 10 years old. And so the other day, oh boy, do I tell this whole story? I am going to tell this whole story. The other day, my uncle said, did you hear about your dad's chickens? And that's not how my uncle talks. He's the one from Las Vegas that always tells dirty jokes. And they're not always dirty. They're usually un-PC, if you can say that. Racist jokes and stuff like that. And he's a colorful character, but he said, did you hear about your dad's chickens? And I said, no. And he said, a dog got into the chicken coop and killed them all. I said, shoot, that's too bad. And he said, he was really upset about that. And when he said upset, I thought my uncle meant angry. And that's understandable. But he wasn't angry. He was upset. He was sad. He was saddened. He was, I don't know. I mean, maybe it was worse than that, about all these chickens getting killed. And my friend Jeff, he's moving to Germany and giving away all of his possessions. And I talked to him and I said, hey, could my dad have some of your chickens? And he's like, sure, sure. You know, he's been trying to give them away. And some neighbors said they would take them, and then they haven't. And he said, you know, every day that somebody doesn't take them, you know, we still have to feed them, and it's still one more thing to worry about. And so I called my dad, and I said, you know, my friend Jeff's got some chickens, if you would want them. And Dad said, oh, yeah, I haven't known what I was going to do. You know, I raised all those chickens from chicks, and it really upset me. This dog got in there, and it was still in the coop, and it just killed them all. It didn't eat them or anything. It just killed them. And I went back in the house, and I called animal control, and they said, well, we can come down there and take care of this dog for you if you want us to, but we got to charge you $70 because it's so far. You know, if you're okay with that, that's what we'll do. And Dad said, oh, I don't want to pay you $70. What's my options? And he said, the guy on the phone said, you know what to do. And Dad said, I know what to do. And he says, yeah, sure. You know what to do. We'll talk to you later, sir. And he hung up. Anyway, my dad told this story. So I guess he went into the house and got a shotgun and took care of this dog, which I guess makes you feel better. I don't know. That's a thing. I told Jeff this story and he's like, oh yeah, sure. You can kill any animal if it's attacking your livestock. It's totally legal. You don't have to call the police and ask them or any of that stuff. It's understood that that's what you do. I mean, if it's your neighbor's dog or whatever, it's polite to go over there and tell the neighbor and have them take care of it. But it's understood. And I guess makes sense. I don't know. Anyway, I feel like I'm oversharing. But this is all Marshall Latham's fault, really. So anyhow, the next morning, I met my dad as early as I was willing to get up, and we drove up to Jeff's house, and we caught these chickens together, and he was able to replace the ones that were killed, and he was really happy about this. And, you know, he's a hard man around me, as I've said, and he's certainly never been very affectionate over the years, but there was definitely some gratitude there. And he said, why, this is like a birthday present for me, which is pretty grateful coming from him. So I was happy about that. Anyway, I know that he called this place where they sold the Corolla, and I just arrived there and killed the engine. And oh, here he is, and pulling up in the Jetta I mentioned. It's like an 87 Jetta or something. Give me a minute. So I can't remember what I was telling you. We stopped and we looked at the car, and it was expensive. It was a Corolla, and that's what had sold the last time. This one was more expensive, and it's red. And red is my favorite color and always has been. There was an episode of Fantasy Island that gave me nightmares when I was a little boy. And some evil character, it might even have been a ghost, said, our family color has always been blood red. And I was like, blood red? That's awesome. That's what I want my favorite color to be. And anyhow, it's a lovely red color, and it was expensive. My dad had told me one number, and on the windshield, a different number, a higher number, had been written. It's the newest car. It's the newest car I'd ever considered buying, and I didn't know if I wanted to be irresponsible and wipe out all of my savings on a newish car, or if I wanted to play it safe. And there was still the Acura there from last week. Was it last week or 2 weeks ago? But my dad said, well, let's take it for a ride. And we took it for a test drive. And it was just so nice. You know what I mean? It had all sorts of amenities and things. Like, it has a USB port as well as one of those auxiliary, like, headphone jack type things. I've never even seen a car that had a USB port before. Anyway, I was just trying to air my misgivings to him about spending all of my savings. I mean, I had pretty much decided I was going to have to pass on it, and he says, well, we can go back and drive that Acura. So we did. We went back, and it was it's still a newer car than I've ever bought before. It had 85,000 miles on it. But it was a 2006, and the seats were scuffed up. In fact, there were, like, scrapes all on the dashboard and stuff that would be caused by, I don't know, cowboy boots or something. And it just immediately, when I was in it, I didn't like it. I took it on the freeway briefly, and it sort of vibrated, it shimmied, whatever you call that, where, you know, when you get up to about 70 and it goes, and I thought, oh, geez, I don't care that this costs half as much. I don't want this one. And I just said to him, what should I do? I want to be responsible and still have savings in case of an emergency. And he said, you always get these cheap used cars, and you end up spending a fortune maintaining them. You ought to try getting a new car just once. It's like, see if you could drive it for 10 years, just not have to worry. And I don't know, that sounded like fatherly advice. That sounded like the kind of thing that a dad would say, where you're like, okay, you know, because I was on the fence. I wanted to get it, but it's just so much. Then he said, you know, you ought to try a newer car. And so I went back and I bought that car just now. And it wipes out all of my savings. In fact, I think I better check with the bank as soon as I get home to make sure that check is going to clear. It sort of takes me back to where I was a couple years ago. And this is going to be funny. A couple years ago, Abby Hilton gave me some money for doing Hunter's Unlucky, for narrating Hunter's Unlucky. She gets all the money for the audiobook. I don't get a royalty share, you know. But she was paying me a lot. She figured, you know, if she was going to demand a professional level audiobook from me, she was going to pay me professional rates. And that took me from, you know, living paycheck to paycheck to suddenly having money in the bank. And I don't want to say I've never looked back, but I've never faltered since then. I've always had money in the bank. But right now, as soon as that check clears, I won't. But it's only been a couple of years, not even a couple of years since I did Hunter's Unlucky. And part of me feels like, well, okay, you know, let's see how long it takes me to get back in the black this time. I feel a little bit optimistic about it, but at the same time, it's just like, wow, A, it's red. And haven't you always heard that red cars get the most trouble? They get stolen. Cops always pull over a red car. And then two, it's just so new. I mean, it's not actually a new car. It's a 2012. But for me, it's so new that I wonder if I'm going to start to worry. It's going to cost a lot to insure it. But I'm going to try this. We will see how it goes. And so I got a new car. I'm still driving the rental, and my dad said to just go ahead and drive the rental for as long as it's mine, because why not? Why put more miles on my car when I can drive somebody else's car for free? And that makes sense. Anyhow, I was thinking about, sometimes I will do these Rish Outcasts, and I'll wonder, well, why would anybody want to listen to this? Why would anybody care what's going on in my life, or what my story ideas are, or how much I liked so-and-so movie or didn't like so-and-so movie? you know, I feel like an imposter. But Marshall Latham, I was telling you just a few minutes ago, for me it's been hours, but for you it's been a few minutes, had that podcast, and I liked it fine. I liked listening to the things he was talking about and his thoughts, and he doesn't make any effort to be amusing or to be clever, or, you know, he doesn't say incendiary things just to get a rise out of people. It's just him being candid, and I thought, well, if I like that, then somebody out there would like me doing the same thing. I've had 40-something episodes of The Rish Outcast under my belt, and we've had a couple people complain about That Gets My Goat, and I don't want to say that they're assholes, but they were. But I've never had anybody complain about The Rish Outcast. I mean, they've complained that I don't make it easy for you to listen to it, and that I ought to, I don't know, hold your hand more and all that stuff. But this podcast that you're listening to right now is just for you. It's for you and whatever other friends I have, whether they're actual friends or virtual friends. And so, yeah, I guess it sounds like I whine and whinge a little bit about not having any listeners to The Rish Outcast, but it's meant to be a more intimate podcast. It's meant to be something, you know, like the Patreon thing that I'm always encouraged to do. It's created for people that already like my stuff, that may actually already like me. And, you know, if there are more than two people out there that actually do listen to the show, three, I guess, that I can think of, then, you know, that's good. That's good stuff. I'll keep it up. So I got a car. I don't know if I'll regret it, or I don't know if I'll be fine with it. It does make me think, I need to work a little bit harder, put out a few more audiobooks and stuff so that I can build up that savings account again. But I'm doing all right. I put out that Lost and Found audiobook last week, and at least one person that I know of bought it. So that's pretty positive. I'm going to continue. Where I stand right now on my novel is I've recorded the first 6 chapters. The 5th chapter is the one that I felt was the strongest chapter, and it's the one where I knew as I was rewriting it that would be the chapter I'd use as the sample on my audiobook version. And I've gotten all that recorded. I keep meaning at night to continue recording more chapters, but I get tired or lazy. Maybe they're the same thing. So I've been editing them. But by the time this comes out, perhaps it'll be close to done, if not done. I have no idea if it's a good book or not. I think we talked about this. Did we talk about this when I talked about the writer's conference I went to? Where they said you have to give yourself permission to suck. Everybody's first book sucks. There have been a couple of moments while recording the audiobook where I go, uh-oh, maybe this isn't so good. But I've got to just forge on. I've got to get it done and get it out there. And if people buy it, then that's great. And if people don't buy it, at least I put it out there, you know? I set that goal of writing a novel, and I achieved it. But if nobody ever sees the novel, that's just my word, right? That I achieved that goal. We'll see. By the time this comes out, I sure hope that that book is available, that you can go buy it. It's called Into the Furnace. And maybe I'll do a whole episode about it that will drop, you know, as soon as it comes out. That might be kind of clever, right? Where I just talk about the history of the story. Was that the one that I called my dry run? If so, then I did like 20 or 30 blog posts about it. And so maybe I don't need to do a podcast about it since I've already done so much. Anywho, I'm driving the rental car right now, but I've got a new car. And it would be neat if I drove that new car for a while until it's no longer new. You never know what's going to happen in the future, right? Things go well, things go badly, there's always going to be challenges and there's always going to be problems. You're going to get sick. You're going to get hurt. You're going to get tired. You're going to get depressed. But at the same time, you know, there's going to be days that you laugh. There's going to be days when you are pleased with how life is going. There's going to be days when you feel proud of your accomplishments. I have written a couple of short stories this year, and I'm happy about that. I don't know that any of them are great, but I don't know that any of them are bad either. Hopefully I'll put them out and people will like them. And each little thing that I put out will be a little bit more revenue coming in. But even if nobody bought them, you know me, I don't write them for people to buy. I write them for me. It's a story. It's in many ways, I live vicariously through my imagination, you know? And a lot of the characters that I write about are me. You can exercise your demons that way. You can stave off loneliness with your own imagination. You can, you know, have Wilson the volleyball become your best friend and keep you alive on an island because you feel like you're not alone. And maybe I misunderstood the whole idea of Wilson the volleyball, but I guess I'm in a good mood right now sharing this with you. I'm in an optimistic mood. And that's not something that always happens. So I have no idea what I would call this episode, or you could call it Travels with Father, but it's not a ton of it about him. I'm actually almost home already, and I got a few more hours of my day off that I can do whatever I want with. I might edit some audio. I might write. I might blog. I hope I don't just go on Facebook and waste a half hour. But I might do that too. I might read. There's still time. So this has been Rish Outfield. Thank you for driving around with me for a few minutes. And I hope that you have optimism in your life. Because right around the corner, something's coming. I hope it's a good thing. You never know. But something's coming. Good night. The Rish Outcast is presented under a Creative Commons 3.0 no derivatives license. Which means share it, listen to it, love it, get down on your bloody knees and worship it. But don't sell it or change the file. Ooh, that was me driving over a toddler.
Nice to meet you. Where you been? I could show you incredible things. Magic, madness, heaven, sin. Saw you there and I thought, oh my God, look at that face. You look like my next mistake. Love's a game. Wanna play? New money, suit and tie. I can read you like a magazine. Ain't it funny? Rumors fly. And I know you heard about me. So hey, let's be friends. I'm dying to see how this one ends. Grab your passport in my hand. I can make the bad boys good for a weekend. So it's gonna be forever, or it's gonna go down in flames. You can tell me when it's over, if the high was worth the pain. Got a long list of ex-lovers. They'll tell you I'm insane. 'Cause you know I love the players, and you love the game. 'Cause we're young and we're reckless. We'll take this way too far. I'll leave you breathless, or with a nasty scar. Got a long list of ex-lovers. They'll tell you I'm insane. But I've got a blank space, baby. And I'll write your name. Jerry Lips crystal skies. I could show you incredible things, stolen kisses, pretty lies. You're the king, baby, I'm your queen. Find out what you want, be that girl for a month. Wait, the worst is yet to come. Oh no. Screaming, crying, perfect storms, I can make the tables turn. Rose garden filled with thorns, keep you second guessing like, oh my god, who is she? I get drunk on jealousy, but you'll come back each time you leave. Cause darling, I'm a nightmare dressed as a daydream. So it's gonna be forever, or it's gonna go down in flames. You can tell me when it's over, if the high was worth the pain. Got a long list of ex-lovers, they'll tell you I'm insane. Cause you know I love the players, and you love the game. Cause we're young and we're reckless, we'll take this way too far. I'll leave you breathless, or with a nasty scar. Got a long list of ex-lovers, they'll tell you I'm insane. But I've got a blank space, baby, and I'll write your name.